Chapter 5. New Courthouse, Old Problem. In 1997, the new 23-story Orange County Courthouse construction was completed. After spending months installing hundreds of PCs, I was shot. My feet were killing me, and I never wanted to see another box with a computer in it again. Three buildings make up the Orange County Courthouse complex. The A building is called the Public Defender Building. The B building is the State Attorney Building, and the C building is the 23-story tower that contains everything else. Space for my Management Information Systems department was assigned in the Public Defender Building because the PD couldn't fill up all the floors of the A building. Therefore, my staff was assigned a large area on the second floor. Our area was a long, long space, no wider than a few cars that took up most of the window revenue that looked out onto the courtyard. It was nice because it split up my staff so they weren't confined in a block of cubes and were able to spread out somewhat. For example, you couldn't hear a conversation taking place if you were standing at one end of our area while the conversation was occurring at the other end. It was a nice enough space for my department, however. From day one, there were problems. Our one and only programmer, AKA Madman, absolutely hated Jezebel. At one point, they worked in the same room in the old courthouse. Rumor had it that working together, alone, in the same office, at some point Jezebel and Madman became intimate. T-Hiz was never confirmed by either party, and if it was a sex thing, then its duration was relatively short. It may have never happened at all, but Madman did get very close to Jezebel. Then, when Jezebel began hanging out with Chief Judge Perry, the two had a major falling out. And when I say major, I mean that Madman hated her with every fiber of his being. If murder was legal, he would have killed Jezebel without a moment's hesitation and slept like a baby. However, Jezebel was not defenseless. She always used sex as a weapon. She had no problem soliciting overt sexual signals, such as resting her hand on your leg, or maybe pulling her chair up very, very close to you when you were explaining something. Most men who were into young Puerto Rican women might misinterpret her signals, but the signals exhibited by Jezebel were not meant to be misinterpreted. There was always a method behind her madness. She calculated every potential sexual encounter and analyzed what could be gained or lost by the interlude. When I had just hired her, she was in my office located in our computer room, and I was showing her some code I'd written. She moved her chair so close to me that our shoulders were touching. Then, at some point, she laughed at something, slapped my leg, and left her hand resting there. I was in the midst of getting married and wasn't interested, which I believe she took as a subjective insult. After that, she never tried again to make a move on me, because similar to Perry, Jezebel was also psychotic. If you ever took her up on her sexual offers, then she owned you and would remind you every day of that fact. She definitely owned Perry. The thing is that she could only own you if others had an inkling there was a sexual encounter. You can't make a power play unless others respect your power. If not, then all you've created is an end game. Sure, you can sue once you're fired, but you're fired. Not getting fired and milking the job for all it's worth is the smart play. Therefore, at some level, Jezebel would have to make her sexual conquests evident in the workplace without being overt. She was a master at this. I had always assumed it was Jezebel who had told Perry to invite Ed up to his office, and then she encouraged Perry to fondle her in front of Ed. She knew the word would get out, and it would solidify her perpetual power as long as Perry remained the chief judge. This was a prime setup for Jezebel, but she also got very lucky. Over the 30 years of working at the court, I would guess that Belvin Perry was the only chief that was adulterous and evil enough to actually play her game. In order to really make this power duo work, Jezebel had to play the long game. She had to do everything in her power to keep Perry in the big chair. If that creep ever got voted out, then she knew her days were numbered. She had not only burned every bridge she had in the court, but she had also nuked the towns on either side of the bridge. Everyone wanted Jezebel gone. The court administrator and the executives on the 21st floor wanted her gone. All of my department wanted her gone. No one could work with her. Everyone in human resources who was so tired of her continual shitstorm and unending drama wanted her gone. By the time we'd moved into the new courthouse, Jezebel totally owned Perry, and therefore having Madman and Jezebel in the same office was a nightmare. Mad Men didn't seem intimidated in the least that Jezebel owned the chief judge, because he realized that he had written all the software applications that kept our court humming. Even back then, it was difficult to find a good programmer who was willing to work for Orange County wages. However, that doesn't explain why Perry spared Mad Men. This would be the typical morning for the two. If Jezebel had come to work and was in her cube, Mad Men would make a detour to walk in and pass her cube. He could have gone through the other door and bypassed her cube, but he wanted confrontation. If Jezebel said a single thing to Mad Men, he would whisper, "Fuck you, you fucking ugly bitch." Surprisingly, he didn't really care if anyone was around when he said it. Mad Men might have even preferred it in order to humiliate Jezebel in front of MIS staff. I heard it several times, and I have to admit, I wish I had the King Kong-size balls Mad Men had. I would have loved to tell Jezebel to shut the fuck up, get off the goddamn phone, and try to learn a little technology, you fucking cunt. Oh, I got to admit, that felt pretty good just writing that. On other days, Jezebel might not say a single word to Mad Men, but he would again whisper, "Fucking bitch," as he passed her cube. Once we had all occupied our new office space in the new courthouse, this interplay went on for weeks. I didn't know where it was going or where it would end up, but like most issues, I assumed it would probably come to a head with me sitting in Perry's office trying to save my job. It was such a harsh interaction between the two that I sensed something had to eventually break. Either Mad Men would walk in with a gun and all of us would point him towards Jezebel's cube, or Jezebel was going to have Perry intervene. At one point, it got so bad that Jezebel actually came into my office, sat on my couch, and complained.
"I don't know what to do about Mad Men. He's continually calling me a fucking bitch, and I'm getting tired of it."
I immediately realized that this was a very bad situation. Not for Mad Men, not for Jezebel, but for me. Anytime I had any type of interaction with Jezebel, I had to gauge my response and consider many different viewpoints and outcomes. One of those outcomes was if I would be able to pay for my kids to go to college and pay for braces. With this new lump of shit Jezebel had just dumped into my lap, my first thoughts went toward, how's she going to play this? She could put me on the spot and insist I do something about it. Then, if I did nothing, it was playtime for Perry with me in his office. If I did something about it, then I didn't know what that something would be. I guess I could have told Mad Men to stop calling her a fucking bitch, but I enjoyed it. He enjoy edit. My staff enjoyed it. He was so blatant about his hatred for the woman that I'm certain the only thing Mad Men would have done is to say fucking bitch a little quieter. My gut reaction to her complaint was, "Well, why don't you have your boyfriend handle the situation?" Meaning Perry, of course, but I couldn't say that and keep my job. So I looked deeper into my crystal ball of horrible outcomes and saw a vision of Perry calling me up to his office and beginning his tirade with, "Am I to understand that you have a male employee calling a female employee a fucking bitch and you have done nothing about it?" Jezebel was sitting patiently on my couch with a look of expectation on her face. Before I responded, I had to take into account the timing of her complaint. The timing was an important factor in determining if I would get called out by Perry. After all, this abuse, if you can call fighting off an anaconda abuse, had been ongoing for months, maybe even before we moved into the new courthouse. And this meant that Jezebel had never told Perry about my programmer's verbal assaults. Jezebel would rat out anyone in MIS at the drop of a hat, so why was she giving my programmer special consideration? If she overheard a conversation she felt Perry could use for ammunition, she would be on the phone faster than a jackrabbit launched from a cannon. She had Perry on speed dial, including his work cell phone and his secret cell phone he kept for his philandering. However, in this situation, Mad Men's insults were an overt act of hostility and hatred, but she had never reported him to Perry. I thought to myself, what the fuck is up with that? This was so frickin' weird. The only reason I could fathom for Jezebel not taking Mad Men out was he had something on her. Something that she didn't want known. But what? I knew that in her first year at the court, she had given blowjobs to two or three men who worked in other non-court Orange County departments. Always blowjobs, never sex, because being from Puerto Rico, she was Catholic. From what she had told these men, Jezebel came from a very religious family, and she was saving herself for marriage. I assumed she had attended the Monica Lewinsky School of Fellatio Etiquette. Of course, the Catholic Charter. Two of the guys told me she always swallowed, but swallowing isn't a crime. Madman already knew that from first-hand knowledge. I meant first-hand knowledge. So what could he possibly have on her? It was something so bad that he had the balls to continually call her a fucking bitch without fear of Perry firing him. I never did figure it out or ask him what he had on her. To intimidate and demean Jezebel to the extent he took it, it had to be something staggering. Maybe she admitted to killing someone back in Puerto Rico. Maybe she had robbed a bank or was from a country other than Puerto Rico and became a sex slave to get her green card. Maybe she had a criminal record wherever the fuck she came from. She could have run a house of prostitution that specialized in only blowjobs, swallowing extra. I will never know, but it was something major. That's for sure. Madman went on to formally retire from the court. He was never fired or called up to Perry's office. Amazing. During a meeting with my court administrator, I mentioned the situation. He laughed. That was it. No one wanted to touch that situation with a 10-foot pole, so I knew I was on my own. He did eventually offer an office in another building where we could put Jezebel, but she turned it down and indicated she wanted to stay in our office. I must have taken a long time to decide how to respond to Jezebel's complaint. She sat quietly on the couch across from my desk. Eventually becoming impatient, she said,
"Well?"
Trying to buy time, I asked, "How long has this been going on?" It seemed like a logical question. She said,
"Since Madman and I worked in the same room back at the old courthouse."
I nodded like I gave a shit and asked, "Why did you wait so long to report this?" Now Jezebel had to take a moment to think. After a moment or two, she surfaced with,
"Because I really can't take it anymore. I tried to reason with Madman and make things right, but it's only getting worse."
I asked, "Why is he so mad at you?" Jezebel looked contrite and said,
"I have no idea."
I suggested, "Why don't you give him a few more blowjobs? That would make him happy." Of course, I didn't say that. Of course, I wanted to. If I had balls the size of Madman, I would have said it. Yet I wanted to keep my job, which gave me the ball size of twin BBs. Instead, I asked, "Have you reported this to Human Resources?" She responded,
"No, I wanted to come to you first about it."
I thought to myself, "Really? You have never come to me about anything. You told my staff that you don't consider me your boss. You always go directly to Perry, and every time you do, my week or month sucks." I said, "I don't think you two will ever get along, and I certainly don't think you two should be working in the same area. I'll see what I can do." Jezebel looked at me like that might be a good solution and said,
"Good. When are you going to move, Madman?"
She said this, so I knew that she had no intention of moving out of our office. I responded, "I'll have to check with the court administrator." She got up and left my office, and I could almost make out a male voice saying the faint words, "fucking bitch," as she passed by. Madman's cube. Everyone in my department got along well with one another, with the exception of Jezebel. We even got along great with Madman. He was very respectful to everyone but Jezebel. As fate would have it, it just so happened that due to her seniority, Jezebel selected a cube exactly between support and systems so she could hear everything from either side of the office. I can envision her jotting down notes or possibly making a recording to share with Perry. Jezebel's presence turned my department into a no-talk zone. No one would say anything within earshot of Jezebel because they knew that everything they said could be held against them in the court of Perry law. Any conversation that didn't deal with work issues either died out entirely or was held behind the few closed doors to real offices in our area. And even then, voices were hushed in case Jezebel was standing with her ear to the door. No one felt safe. We all felt that due to Jezebel's presence, all our jobs were in jeopardy, and she loved it. This zipped lip thing didn't go over well with Jezebel. Hushed conversations would cease when she walked by, and you would think that would be good enough for the woman who had no assignments or duties. But no. Now she felt she was being left out of critical system decisions. She and Perry shared an equal-size ego. So now, with Jezebel complaining she was being ostracized and left out of critical system and infrastructure decisions, She complained to Perry, and I found myself back in his chamber and back on my heels. He said,
I hear that you aren't using Jezebel to her full potential. She feels that you are giving prime assignments to others, and she is getting nothing but menial tasks.
Besides, Jezebel, my system manager, was the only other person working in systems at that time. It was easier for me not to give Jezebel anything to do, or else I would end up in Perry's office less often than when I gave her assignments. It was easier on my system manager because Jezebel fucked up everything she worked on. When you fuck up in systems, the entire computer infrastructure goes down and no one can work. Every time Jezebel took down the court, she blamed it on anyone and everyone. She would blame it on being left out of critical technical conversations. She would blame it on support making some type of change she was not aware of. She would blame it on vendors, faulty equipment, power fluctuations, and poor backups. During the entire time Jezebel worked for me, she never admitted to fucking up anything, and even the very best system analyst will totally bone something within their career. In my younger days, I worked for a huge hospital in New Mexico as a computer operator, running a million-dollar mainframe. While running the hospital payroll, I entered a 5-digit check number as the starting check number, when the program wanted a 6-digit check number. For some reason, the programmer put an extra default 0 at the end of the number instead of the beginning, and it blew up the check register. The entire 24-hour run had to be scrapped, and 40 boxes of green bar and special forms that had been printed out had to be tossed. So, yeah, even I messed up, although it was the programmer who was terminated. He had not only allowed me to enter a 5-digit check number with any error control, but then he had made the decision to put the default 0 at the end instead of the beginning of the check number. Poor programming. After only being in the new courthouse for less than a year, Jezebel began complaining about her eyes watering and itching. Months of her complaining went on until she was certain there was something in her area that was causing her eye irritation. It crossed my mind that since she was a blowjob type of girl, maybe she had stopped swallowing and was now catching some jizz streams in her eyes. Possibility. Nonetheless, she reported it to Perry, and Perry instructed court administration to have air quality testing done in our office area. No one else was having this problem. Just Jezebel. Even so, court administration brought in a very expensive air quality testing company, not once, but twice, the second time to test our kitchen area and refrigerator. And when that yielded no results, the water in our break room kitchen was tested to no avail. No one could find anything wrong with the air or the water, and Jezebel claimed her eye irritation was still being caused by something in our office area. I can't remember exactly, but I believe Perry or Jezebel or court administration reported her situation to Orange County Risk Management. Then I received the best phone call of my career. Jezebel's eye condition had escalated high up inside the county government. Thank you, Belvin. One day, the court administrator called me and said that they are going to move Jezebel to a private office in the tower of the C building. If I hadn't been sitting, I would have fallen to my knees, thanking any god from any religion that had their ears on. It was so wonderful. At least for my little area in the universe, my immediate Jezebel problem was solved. No longer could she listen to our conversations. No longer would there be a Madman versus Jezebel pay-per-view war, at least not one in front of us. I could run up and down our narrow office space naked with scissors in my hands, maybe leaving the refrigerator door open, and Perry would be none the wiser. Yes, I was free. We were free. Go figure, Jezebel was not happy with the move to her new office. She complained to Perry, and Perry tried to stop the move. However, County Risk Management told the court there wasn't a choice. If whatever was causing her eye problem continued in another building, then it was not an environmental issue. It was a personal medical issue, probably allergies. As I mentioned, Jezebel wasn't happy moving to her own office in the other building. That meant that Chief Judge Perry was not happy either. He understood that a huge source of his inside information would quickly dry up, and there would no longer be Jezebel reports from MIS. Once Jezebel had moved out of our area, things were pretty sweet, considering I could still be fired at any moment by Perry. Jezebel was still just as dangerous as she had ever been. She would completely rely on electronic eavesdropping since verbal intelligence gathering was no longer an option. Since Jezebel would casually visit our office area, it was decided that Madman would also be moved to an office in another building, so all interaction between the two could be completely avoided. Even though Jezebel was no longer in our department, I knew I couldn't let my guard down. And fate would have it that the next phase of the Perry and Jezebel fiasco would be so much worse than what had previously taken place.